318-92, talking about Peter Andreevich, age 61. Where did you live during World War II?
In a rural area outside of Monroe, on a farm, just about two miles outside of Monroe on Blue Bush Road. And that was through 1943, and the remainder of the war, we had moved to another farm on North Custer Road.
Okay. On the farm, was there anything special that, you know, such as, you know, did you have animals? What did you do on the farm?
Oh, then on the farm that we had a slaughterhouse on the farm, which during the war meat was scarce, and so we had a packing house out there. Because while we had the farm, my dad was also engaged in a grocery business in the city of Monroe on West Elm Avenue. And he supplied most of the meat for the store from the slaughterhouse that was operated on the farm.
Do you remember hearing that the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor?
But I can't recall, you know, where I was or what have you. I imagine I heard about it the same morning as anybody else, and probably heard it on the radio or read about it in a paper. But I don't recall any special incident or place or where I was at or anything at that.
Yeah,
at the time that it happened, I was just turned 11 years old anyway.
At age 11, did you go to school and where? And
yeah, well, age 11, I'd be about in the fifth or sixth grade, so at that time I would have been going to a leech school that was about 2 miles from our home on Blue Bush Road. And I can remember having bond drives and at school buying stamps that you would accumulate, and if you got $18.75 worth, then you could buy a savings bond. But there wasn't a lot of, I don't remember a lot of discussion about the war per se as part of the classroom.
Was this a one-room schoolhouse, or?
Yeah, it was a one-room schoolhouse. 8 grades 1 through 8 in it. And, but that's about the things that we did as kids, like for the war effort, was, you know, buy the savings stamps. And you heard things about drives to collect scrap metal and different things, and putting up with shortages so that the boys could have stuff to fight with.
Were your parents active?
And I had to sacrifice on the home front and stuff like that.
Were your parents active in these scrap drives?
No, not out in the country, they didn't, but most of those were organized and put on in the city, but you felt like you should do something, though, because there was a lot of advertisements for it. And there were slogans like, remember Pearl Harbor after Pearl Harbor. That was like a battle cry, like remember the Alamo and remember the Maine and remember Pearl Harbor. And that was taken up in songs. There was Sack Mr. Jap, and then there was Remember Pearl Harbor, and there was Spike Jones and the Fuhrer's Face, different songs that I recall. things like that. There was no television, so radio was the thing that you listened to for the news. And
what kind of radio programs were on right about that time?
Oh, boy, the nighttime programs would have been like, big ones would have been Jack Benny and Burns and Allen, Allen's Alley. And then for kids, daytime afternoon programs would be Jack Armstrong, All American Boy, A Little Orphan Annie, some of the other ones were Mr. Keen, Tracer, Lost Persons. Then there were Firestone Hour for classical music and things like that.
As far as sports, did you participate in any?
No, again, at the...
Did you go to games?
Like, yeah, I was 14 when the war ended, so... So there wasn't much organized activity at the country school.
The holidays during World War II, what were they like? Christmas and...
Yeah, well, you had nothing to compare it with for a younger person, so you didn't know anything different than if it was, because I imagine people coming off the Depression, a lot of people wouldn't have had much during the Depression, and then during the war, they wouldn't have had been able to buy stuff because it wasn't available and that type of thing, so it's hard to know how the war affected Christmas. But then you read about on the different coast how they would have blackouts and stuff like that. I don't think they could let the big lights all over the place lighten up the cities on the coast anyway. And I'm not sure otherwise. I mean, a lot of people would, you'd read about it anyway or see it in the movies where people would, might invite servicemen home for the holidays, even if it wasn't their own relatives. They'd invite a serviceman to share a Thanksgiving or Christmas or something like that.
Okay,
but as far as how abundant the food was, it's hard to tell. Things were, there was a shortage of sugar, so people probably weren't baking any cakes, or shortage of lard and different fats like that. A lot of things that went into making ammunition and things like that.
Okay. The Prohibition era, do you remember anything about that at all, or I know it was a little later?
Yeah, just vaguely. I can remember going into, because that ended like in 32 or something, or 34. But I can remember going into places where, just a young little kid, where they had slot machines and people were drinking, and I don't know if I was supposed to at that time or not.
But you don't know anyone that was involved in it or heard about anyone in Monroe?
Prohibition?
Yeah.
Going back then? Well, my father was, so I'm told, was active in bootlegging liquor, and I don't know that much about it, but I've heard that he had gone over to Canada and at one time had a boat and transported it from Canada to Monroe, and he had had a, they call a blind pig or something, where the liquor was served and sold, and never talked to him that much, but he at one time did indicate that they had, had to pay off the policeman on the payroll and on the take to keep, the business going. And he mentioned one time he was getting more money to pay off the police and taking it in, and they were starting to get competition from some of the other people, then it started getting a little rough and people were, you know, getting shot and stuff like that. But I don't have any direct knowledge of that.
Okay. As far as automobiles, cars,
the cars, I think the last model year was the 42. Now, where they made those in 42, or that was made and started in 41, but they stopped production of civilian cars. Some of them, they just, you know, the same car, they just painted them brown and made them a vehicle for the armed services people to drive, but most of the plants were converted to producing trucks and jeeps and airplanes. And I can remember when the Willow Run bomber plant was built, and they were building the B-24 Liberator bomber, and Bluebrush Road was one route that people took on driving to the bomber plant, and it was a dirt road and a gravel road, and finally they put blacktop on it so that people would be able to better drive that route to the bomber plant. And then Lazy Boy, they converted to making seats for tanks, I believe, or something like that. So they suspended making their chairs. And imagine the same thing with Auto Equipment Company and Woodall. These were all some of the major manufacturing concerns that had converted to war production for whatever they had to produce.
Okay, brothers and sisters, how many did you have? You know, what were they involved in at this time, do you know?
Yeah, but they were just, I had two older brothers and one older sister, and the older brother was drafted or volunteered about in 1944 is when he went in the service in the Army. And
what's his name?
Yeah. Danny. Brother Dan. So by the time he got over, you know, his training and everything, he got overseas, it was on the way, war was on the way being over, and he ended up serving in Korea. He'd stationed there after the war was over. At the time the war ended. And the other brother was too young. He graduated from high school in 46, so the war was over in 45. But I can remember the sister dating some flying cadets that were in training at Groseal. They had a naval air station there. And out on North Custer Road, there was what's now the airport there, that was a field where the planes used to practice. They'd come down and they would like touch down but take off again. I don't know if they maybe practicing carrier landings or something like that. And I don't think they landed as such, but just kind of hopped and skipped and took off again. So you saw, you know, those all the time coming around, those two-winged biplanes, training planes. And you see a lot of servicemen around town that were on furloughs. There was things that remind you there was a war on. But I didn't read about it in the...
Have you? And unless you'd, you know, go by houses and see if they had a star hanging in a window. And I think they had a special colored star if someone had gotten killed from the family. Yeah, gold star, I think there were gold star mothers if they had a son that had gotten killed in action or something like that, I believe.
Um,
Do you think the Depression had anything to do with World War II, as, you know, like, World War II got us out of the Depression, or do you have any feelings about that?
No, I... Some people say that was one way of getting out of the Depression or what have you, but... just seemed like you'd read about the war, starting with the Civil War, and remember reading about the Civil War in Spain and that going on, and then Hitler in Czechoslovakia, and Time magazine, you could see the German paratroopers landing on Malta and stuff like that, but it just, like you read about some other countries in some other part of the world engaging in something that didn't affect us, and it didn't seem that bad until someone decided that the United States was going to go along with England and France supplying them, and then eventually get involved themselves.
The black population in Monroe during this time, were they around? Or they, how was there racism in Monroe? Or
no, there weren't that many black families in Monroe, I don't believe. And the ones that were would have lived south of the Winchester tracks down there. Would have lived east of those yet. So there were very few families, and I can recall they had race riots in 1943 in Detroit, and this was at the peak of the war, and they called out the militia. They didn't call it the National Guard, they called it the state troops, state militia, and they were sent to help break it up, but I don't have that much memory of all that.
Nothing really happened in Monroe.
That happened. No, I don't think there was anything. Well, you know, and there weren't the expressways and things to make everything so much closer like they have now.
How were minorities treated? Do you have any stories, or did you see any?
No, I don't think they weren't treated one way or the other. People didn't pay that much attention to them, but my grandparents lived on the east side of town, and I used to go down there to visit them, and I'd go see a movie show, and I can remember, this is probably in the late 30s, and going into the Majestic Theater and sitting in the wrong place. They had one section just reserved for blacks, and I sat down in there, and then I was told to get out of there. I didn't know, it's dark and you go in there and you don't know where you're sitting to begin with, and then you look around and there's nothing but black people there, and then you find out later that you know, they did happen.
Did they treat
you? I can't remember what section of theater that was, but there was one part, you know, that they sat in. And
how did people react
but
to that?
But at grade school, I didn't go to grade school in town, really. And then by the time I went to high school, I didn't notice any, there were just a few blacks in the school. But didn't notice that any prejudice or discrimination against them.
As far as minorities, were there any other type, you know, Orientals or?
No, there weren't.
Polish.
I don't even think there were many many Mexicans around at that time. There certainly weren't any Middle East people around at that very, you know, around that you would notice. You would have to go to a bigger city to find Chinese or Japanese or whatever.
You mentioned the movie theater. What types of movies were shown? Do you remember newsreels or ever seen those?
Yeah, but they always had the newsreels. That was they didn't have television, so even before the war and then during the war, they always show usually start with in Monroe. It would start with a cartoon and a newsreel, and then they'd get to the main feature. But yeah, how often a newsreel would be probably a who knows how old it would be, maybe a week old news, I'm not sure, at the time, but you'd see the different news events, whatever happened around the world, the globe, and then during the war, it was mostly war news, or taking on tones of, you know, rather than just news, more propaganda than, you know, straight news.
Propaganda than just one side.
We were with Italy too, so we had big Italian population in town. They're fairly big, I would think, and then a lot of Germans, and I'm not sure how that affected them.
The stores in Monroe. Do you remember any special, like, stores, like clothing stores, and
yeah, there was
Five and Dimes.
Yeah, the ones I can remember. Yeah, I was younger and then going through the war years. There was Sears downtown, and there were no shopping centers on the outskirts, but Sears and J.C. Penney were big stores. Sears was on the corner of First Street and Monroe Street, and the Penney's was on Front Street there. And the shoe stores, Watchers, and Jaegers, and Martin's, Panvel, Massey's, hardware stores, and furniture stores. I'm trying to think of the name of the furniture store that was right downtown. And this is where you bought most of your goods. That many people, at least, you know, I was small then, so I don't know whether maybe people did go out of town for shopping a lot then, I'm not sure.
That'd probably be the people with money.
But it seemed like, you know, the downtown was the thing. It was always a big thing on Friday and Saturday nights because all the people from the outskirts of rural, you know, came into downtown Monroe. And I can't remember, was Saturday was the big night or Friday was the big night for shopping, one of the two, I can't remember which. And there was Eagles Hall, I think they used to have dances there and that type of thing. Eagles Hall, they used to be dancing there. But I imagine there were things going on that, being younger, that I was aware of going on for people for their recreation, other than the bars and stuff.
For recreation on the farm, what did you do with Lloyd, you know?
There wasn't too much recreation. It was mainly work. Got home from school and worked on Saturdays and Sundays and
what type,
after,
you know,
school. And now and then got, you know, a chance to go into some younger, got a chance to go into Saturday afternoon, go to a movie. When I got a little bit older, then I was more or less tied down, working in the slaughterhouse and working on the farm, and maybe once I was got into high school, then going to some of the games and what have you after school. But that's where a lot of the entertainment was, or pro sports, with no television, so a lot of people went to school affairs, school plays and school athletic activities. And mentioned back then, though, there weren't that many people living out in the country other than people that lived on farms. There weren't a lot of people just buying a lot and building out in the country to live out in the country. So it was, you were sometimes separated, you had farms, but they were maybe a block away or something like that, another block away for another farm. And so there weren't a lot of kids to gather together to do anything. Like at our school there, which geographically had a pretty big area, it's for the school district, there were less than 30 kids in that school for 8 grades, so it gives you an idea how many families lived around there to supply the kids for the school.
The high school, how many people, how many students were there probably?
Yeah, I started high school in 1944, so fall of 44, and the war was still on. Yeah, but at that time, I don't have any idea, really, because they had the old Monroe High School on between 4th and 5th Streets there. Had grades, the high school part had grades 9 to 12. But they also had grades 7 and 8, part of their junior high school was at the Monroe High School building. So everybody went there, and plus a lot of country people came into Monroe as tuition students, like myself. I wasn't in the Monroe School District, but...
So you had to pay to go to Monroe?
Paid to go there. A lot of kids dropped, after the 8th grade was... like going through high school now, a lot of kids just, the 8th grade was the end of the road, and they'd go on to high school. And you were 16 or 8th grade, and you're out of school.
And then you went on to college.
Yeah, it's later though, but during this war period. Right.
The women, what role did they play in, any part in the county,
what's that?
What? Women, what role did they play? Did they,
what role did women play?
Yeah, did they,
like, you mean during the,
did they, like, the factories, do you remember anything about that?
Yeah, there was, again, a lot of you didn't notice, and, some people that, had younger mothers, or the mothers might have went off to the war plant. I didn't. That was my case, but that's when women first started working away from home. For the most part, there weren't that many women working outside the home. You went downtown to Monroe, and they had clerical jobs in the Woolworths and Kresge's as cashiers and what have you, but they were pretty much out of the factory environment. And I'm not sure to what extent that changed in Monroe. I don't know how many people, women from Monroe, worked in war production. But the whole idea was to replace the men that were going, that were called away to service. So forth. And you heard the stories about Rosie the Riveter and stuff like that, and the songs and the movies that showed the, but most of that you saw in the movies and what have you. Didn't experience it yourself or see it.
So movies played a real major part in finding information.
What's that?
Movies played a major part in information that you got?
Oh, information, but for, movies in the sense that, the
current information.
The movie tone news and stuff like that, but
right.
The movies were a big part of the recreation, because you could go almost any time of the week down to Monroe and well, maybe it wasn't every night of the week, but when you went there, the line, people were lined up to get into theaters. And they'd be waiting out till the people got out from the one, and they'd go in, and there'd be another group waiting to go in. And at that time, they had the Monroe Theater. Now stands, but across from it, they had two other theaters, Dixie and the Family. Three theaters downtown, and then one down the East End, Majestic, and these were all doing a bang-up business. And the Monroe would play the, you know, the first-run features, and the Family Theater had double-run, the double features, but they were like more what they call B-movies, and then the Family, but the Dixie, which was right next to the Family Theater, had some cowboy pictures and series like, you know, like Buck Rogers, and they'd have it in 16 episodes or chapters or something like that, and usually one, which to young, you know, catered to mostly kids, I guess. But they weren't the big movies that came out.
Did you have any toys? Like, related to the movies, perhaps?
What?
Any toys related to the movies, like Buck Rogers guns or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can remember Buck Rogers. There were Buck Rogers, you know, toys, and there were Buck Rogers... cartoons, books, that type of thing. So whether the cartoons came first and then the movie, you know, the movie series from that or vice versa, I don't know. And then there was Flash Gordon, you know, like talking about that, the cartoons that the Sunday paper had. Oh golly, they had Prince Valiant back then, Dick Tracy, some of the features in that, a little Orphan Annie, and then some of the cartoon characters were also on the radio. Little Orphan Annie was after school, and she was sponsored by Ovaltine, and you drank your Ovaltine, and you had a seal on that, and you sent... Oh, yeah, so she was on after, you know, after 4 o'clock, sometime like that, if the kids came home from school, and you try to catch the episode, you send in for the decoder, and then they would give you coded messages, and you'd use your decoder to find out what the message was, and the decoder was took different forms of the whatever show you were watching. But hers, it seems like I can remember being like attached to a badge or something, and I really thought a lot of it. I remember going up and doing some chores, and I had it on me, and I was up in a hay mow, and I lost my little Orphan Annie decoder, and it really felt real bad about losing it. And but I can't remember what it, you know, cost at that. If it was a quarter, that'd be like $2 now or something. But some of the things were, you know, you sent in, they were free. I can remember a Lone Ranger, you'd send things in there, and trying to think who sponsored him. It was General Mills, also some cereal, Pops, or some type of corn cereal. Corn Pops or what have you, and they had prizes, and at the radio I could just, you know, lay in front of the radio and just listen to it hour after hour if the chores were done, and from listening to these adventure Jack, Doc, and Reggie, the three well, I can't think of the name of the program, but those were the three characters. Oh, I Love a Mystery. And they even made that into a television series later on. But you'd go from that to the nighttime shows came on, and Red Skeleton and Bob Hope and boy, a lot of different. The Lone Ranger was a big one. I can't remember if that was on every night or three times a week or what have you. Some of those shows. Green Hornet, and a lot of these shows that were went nationwide, were popular nationwide, originated right at WXYZ in Detroit. The Lone Ranger, the Green Hornet, were two of the big ones. And I'm told that Danny Thomas played some part in the Green Hornet series for a period of time. And but still, even, you know, people listen to the radio, but they still, the movie shows were still the big thing with the visual effect. You know, you didn't have with the radio. But again, when the television came along, that the attendance at the movies really was affected.
What kind of books and magazines were around back then?
But during the war, Life magazine came out probably in 36, 37, something like that, I think. And I can remember, you know, seeing, because that was a picture magazine and easy to look through. I remember that before the war and during the war. So Life magazine, there was a magazine, another picture magazine called Look magazine. That was a big one. The Saturday Evening Post was another big magazine, but you know, one of the oldest ones that they had that went way back to the 1800s, I guess. But and those were like three of the ones that come to mind, plus your Popular Mechanics was always, you know, that type of magazine was around, and a lot of comic books. I can remember comic books, you know, reading those when the characters weren't all that long in existence. The Superman and Batman, and you know, reading those and collecting those. Golly, you know, the early 40s. And if I had collected those and kept them in good shape, I guess I would have some magazines that would be worth some money.
Okay, then, well, thank you for your time.
Talk much about the war, though.